You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
The Celtic Exchange, a fresh insight on Celtic Football Club.
This is episode 74 of the Celtic Exchange Weekly. This is Tino, and this week I'm joined by Miff and Paddy as Celtic make it 2 wins from 2 on a tricky day in Dingwall to maintain their place at the top of the Scottish Premiership table. Miff, a wee bit of huffing and puffing at the Global Energy Stadium, but we got there in the end.
We certainly did, Tino. Hello, Tino. Hello, Paddy. Hello, listener. Check this out, man. I've just realised.
Nice. Twins.
Come on, man.
Twins.
That one's for Sinky. Hello, sorry, a wee bit of sidetracked here, Tino. Yes, a bit of huffing and puffing. However, job done, and all in all, a far more stable start to the season than what we experienced last year. We seem to be in some sort of groove already. You can see that the team that Ange is preferring to put out in the park. You can see that the pattern of play is well established. For me, reasons to be cheerful.
Nice. Paddy, you and I done the pre-match show for this one. That went out on Friday at the Celtic Exchange Plus, and you predicted a 3-0 win to Celtic. You were close enough, eh?
And do you know something? I think the performance that I kind of spoke up near the end of that post-chat was basically saying that, you know, it would be a comfortable, confident victory. And I take obviously what the press want to say about things. I still think it was. It looked very comfortable. We've seen some things for the players and kind of saying, you know, that they just know that they need to just trust this process and keep going. And it's evident on Saturday. Good performance for them.
Yeah, and 3-1's a solid win. But Miff, you and I were chatting earlier on, you're a wee bit spiky about how the media have reported Celtic's win.
Spiky, yes. I just feel that there is a kind of undercurrent of almost playing down how Celtic are playing, from the point of view of you could argue, if you were of a certain persuasion, that Celtic were rescued on Saturday, but I don't feel that was the case. I didn't manage to watch the game. I wasn't able to get the old pirate stream. So I just put up with Sky Sports News instead and watched my Coupon slowly fade away. And Mark Benstead was fairly, you know, he was reporting on the game. That was all I had heard at the time, and it was really a case of when, not if, Celtic were going to score, controlled the game, said Maeda should have scored, Arelli had been close, etc, etc. And then even after it went to 1-1, Celtic really turned the screw in search for the winning goal. Then lo and behold, the kind of match report, and I'm going to reference it, it's the BBC Sport website, it seemed to focus more on just how organised Ross County were rather than the fact that Celtic had dominated the game, created a lot of chances and ultimately ran out comfortable winners. That's my chosen narrative on it. Whether people agree with me or not is up to them. I don't know if that is in any way connected to the fact that the BBC themselves have recently reconciled with Rangers. That's why we're paranoid, etc, etc. But for me, you know, these are the type of things that have effectively led to podcasts like us being in creation, because people want to hear it from a Celtic point of view. Not that the BBC are obliged to do that. They're obliged to be neutral in instances. But for me, that it's almost treating you like you're stupid. That's the bit I don't like. And to me, it's clearly, obviously, trying to create a narrative that quite simply doesn't exist.
Yeah. My Fair Chances are featured on Sports Scene with Stephen Thompson, Shelley Kerr, Ricky Foster, they're dwindling by the week.
Sounds like a good thing.
It's pretty disappointing. Yeah. It's pretty disappointing.
What's your take, Paddy, just on the media noise after the weekend's results?
Yeah, I can kind of, I'd agree with Miff on it. I think I was reading a few tweets over the weekend basically talking about even Sports Scene's coverage of the game was a lot less than what, you know, was shown at Ibrox as well. And it's maybe just part of the deal that's been struck up for the early days just to kind of, you know, massage the ego of Rangers again under that deal. But, you know, as much as it can annoy the likes of us, it's not going to take away from the fact that that is a solid start to the season for us. And I'm still yet to kind of see any major worries from this start 11. If anything, they're only going to get stronger. So good start for us. I think we said in the pre-match, Tino, that it was going to be quite a difficult one. But if we were firing all cylinders, we could have possibly taken maybe more than three off them, you know. But I generally think that they do set up well. That's why they had such a good season last year.
Mm-hmm.
But we still scored three goals against them. Yeah. So, and quite comfortably. So, nah, good performance, and can ignore that lot.
Just on the whole score prediction thing, mm-hmm. Was there any other predictions for last week on the podcast?
Tell me. Did you call it?
Did you call it?
You 2-1. For 2?
3-1. Well, according to Sinclair, I can't remember.
Well done, young man. So in this week's show, we'll cover that trip to the Highlands as Celtic recovered from a Ross County equaliser to take all 3 points back to Glasgow. We'll also chat through the latest noise coming from the transfer market with just a few weeks or so to go before that slam shut, Miff. Slam shut. We'll then have a look at the ongoing improvements we're seeing under Ange, and in particular from guys like Greg Taylor, who have fully bought into his methods. And finally, we'll look ahead to Sunday's trip to Rugby Park as Celtic face newly promoted Kilmarnock in match day 3 of the Scottish Premiership. So on to Saturday's game, against Ross County. And the big news pre-match was that Moritz Jens would be making his debut alongside Cameron Carter-Vickers in the centre of defence after Stephen Welsh unfortunately took unwell at training on Friday. Miff, a shame for Welsh. He'd started the season well, obviously got that opening goal against Aberdeen the week before, but what was your verdict on Jens and how he performed?
Well, again, I'm only going by what I heard and then partially what I saw in the highlights, but he has the look of an accomplished defender. He's young. We've got the option to buy, which bodes well. We know Ange doesn't really like disruption to his centre-half pairing, so what it would suggest to me is that he's come in, he's made an impression, and the jersey, unfortunately for Stephen Welsh, is now his. I wouldn't imagine that if Welsh is fit, he would go and put him straight back in, because I think it is pretty marginal between Welsh and Jens, to be perfectly honest. To go up to Ross County, I mean, we've conceded from a corner. It looked a fairly tame goal on the television at the time when it was being reported. Mark Benstead had said that he thought Joe Hart could have done better on seeing the goal on television. There is a Ross County player impairing his view just before it, who moves out the way. It does look a soft header, but again, he's not really time to react, so I wouldn't be overly critical of that.
Yeah, I don't think Hart can do much. It comes at him at pace from very short distance. For me, actually, Jens is a bit weak at the goal, to be honest with you. I think the Iacovite that scored the goal, and he's a bit, you know, all over him, you know, arms and elbows and all that kind of stuff. But that Jens is 6 foot whatever.
Aye.
I think it's his job to deal with that. So overall, good game, composed, gets his goal, but maybe could be doing better there. In terms of his goal, Paddy, he described that as the proudest moment of his career so far. He was speaking to Celtic TV after the game, and I think you can see he's delighted to be here, and he'll be looking to grab this opportunity with both hands.
Well, absolutely, and I think that the reaction, his celebration, speaks volumes on it, the scenes that it basically caused, and, you know, what it meant for the fans, because as fans, you know, you start to get a bit worried when the minutes are ticking down and you think it's maybe just not going to be our day today. Not that anything was wrong with the football, but you see that release, that euphoria from the players as well. After the, you know, all the methods that they've played with for that full 90 minutes, and it pays off. So there was a bit of relief for their side as well. And again, it's not as if we've escaped with anything there. It's because what they've been trying to implement has worked.
Just that's the very thing I would say, Paddy, and to reference the point we've already made about how the game was reported. It's, for me, the most important aspect to that is the fact that we have been relentless against what is a stubborn opposition, yeah, or a stubborn opponent, should I say. That to me is the very obvious takeaway. The defending champions continuing their relentless domestic run,
mm-hmm,
and showing that they have a spirit which quite simply says we don't want to drop points. Yeah. Now, had they dropped points, then that's when you laud County absolutely mm-hmm. for a dogged display, and that's what they do. They've done it to us before. Pretty sure they'll do it to us again. Right. Mm-hmm. But that's testament to them and the way that they've set up, and I'm taking nothing away from them. You know, seen another argument for Ewan Murray on Twitter. I hate to even reference him on this podcast, but basically saying that Celtic and Rangers fans, for that matter, shouldn't celebrate victories, which quite an interesting take.
Just a big off, mate.
However, the fact is Celtic won the game, and they won the game because of that attitude, because of that drive, because of the way they are coached to continue to play that style of football. And the third goal is as a result of Greg Taylor being so far up the park that he's able to press the opposition centre-half into making a mistake and then contribute to the goal mm-hmm. taking place. That is the big takeaway from me, is that relentless spirit within the team.
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of trust the process going on there. You know, it doesn't matter if you score the winner in the first half or in the very final kick of the ball, and I suppose Anthony Ralph Snippet, Dingwall last time out last year shows you that it can happen in the 97th minute if need be. But Celtic get into the final 10 minutes, there's a wee bit of anxiety, but I still wasn't particularly nervous, because you know that we're going to create chance after chance after chance, and we don't just get the second goal, we go and get the third. And as you say, Miff, the goals have come about, for me the goals have come about because of how Ange wants them to play. The second goal is by a result of a quick free kick. Jota gets it, puts it down quickly, taps it to Taylor, who gives it back, and he whips it in. If you don't take the quick free kick that Ange wants you to take, or the quick corner kick, sorry, and you maybe just go and you swing it to the back post and you see what happens, you might or you might not score. But we've got a goal because we've done what we do. We take everything sharp. The moment the ball's out of play, we get it back in. So that's a direct result for goal two. And for goal three, you're absolutely right. Greg Taylor leading the charge, pressing their defender. So he's one of our defenders, but he's up there pressing their defender, harrying and harassing him, and all of a sudden it breaks, and there's a couple of passes between Taylor, Abada, out to Jota, back to Abada, goal. And it's all as a result of this relentless high press. So the players should continue to trust the process, because the proof's in the pudding week after week that it's bringing results.
Yeah, yeah. Three great goals as well. Three really, really good goals. That, talking about the second one, the ball in, brilliant. You just eat that up every day, don't you? Just a great ball, a great ball.
I think I'd seen a still photo, and it's the height that Jens get on. It's easy when you're 6 foot odds, but the height he gets up mm-hmm. above just any of the opposition defenders, it's just a notable leap, which bodes well. I know he's maybe like sealed in a wee bit for the goal. But what you need to remember is, first game, only go to improve, you know, hopefully build a partnership with Carter Vickers. Jota, we mentioned that at the start of the season, when it was confirmed that he was signing permanently, we knew. We'd seen him last season, we'd seen glimpses. If you've got him fit, a pre-season, and we're already seeing that bear fruit. I mean, the guy is just a wonderful, wonderful footballer.
He is an absolute game changer in every sense of the word. So, you know, in terms of what he brought to the game, so a hat-trick of assists, another man in the match performance to follow up from the one that he picked up last week by Aberdeen. And as you say, Paddy, I think all three goals are very, very good goals. And if you look at them from a Jota point of view, in terms of what he's brought to them, they're real quality, but in very different ways. So the first goal, it's great dribbling. Initially out in the touchline, he nutmegs a guy, brings it into McGregor, continues his run into the box, could have maybe gone down for a penalty, stays on his feet, perfect cutback for Kyogo, and Kyogo does the rest. For the second goal, I've just spoke about it, the quick corner, it's Jota that takes the corner, it's Jota that whips in, it's 2-1 Celtic. And for the third goal, it's just a very quick and incisive first touch pass back into Abada, yeah. And it's 3-1 and it's done and dusted, and Jota is the game changer. Celtic have scored 5 league goals so far, Jota's contributed to 4 of them. And what's interesting about that, impressive as it is, aside from that, all of his creation is coming off the left-hand side. So yeah. If you look at the three chances from Saturday and the goal that he scored against Aberdeen, he's coming in from the left. Now, what's interesting and what I'd like to put to you, lads, is that Ange loves Dyson Maeda, mm-hmm. right? He is the epitome of an Ange Postecoglou side. And more often than not, Maeda starts. And he'd started on Saturday. He started on the left. But when Jota gets over there, he is terrifying for defences. And what do you think about the fact that, yes, Maeda gives you everything in terms of setting the tone and the work rate, but are we a better side with Jota on the left and perhaps Abada on the right?
I wouldn't know. I think it's maybe just too early for that to kind of judge that one, Tino.
Speculate, Paddy, just make something up.
I would actually like to see Maeda maybe being tried out on the right.
Yeah, why not?
And the reason I say that is just, as much as obviously, you know, Jota will pull a defence in a midfield all over the park, especially the left and the right, but more so on the left. We know how comfortable he is, and he was great for us there last season. But what I think Maeda also brings is that he presses so high up the park and puts defenders under a lot of pressure, as does Kyogo. And what you're finding there is that the team look ready to pounce. You watch the likes of the game against Aberdeen, anytime there was a bit of pressing, O'Reilly, Hatate, they were all there to pick up the scraps, and it's something they work on. And I just think that will get better in time for this season. I really do. Yeah. However, Abada, just again makes everything, it's a great headache to have. Like, he's come on, what a finish. Yeah. What a great goal.
Brilliant finish.
And he's well worth starting as well, absolutely.
Yeah. In terms of the Maeda stuff, I have to follow on from what Paddy's saying. He sets the tone, and often he's the first one to press, and it puts serious pressure on defenders, and all of a sudden they panic, and that's when Jota and Kyogo and O'Reilly and Hatate and all these guys then kind of bring up the rear, if you like, to catch up anything that's been spilled. What do you think, Miff? I mean, if we've got a cup final tomorrow, do you go Maeda, do you go Abada?
I wouldn't be adverse to trying Maeda on the right, to be honest with you. I think what's became very apparent, and I would agree with Pad, it was the same even with his pre-season performances, with Jota on the left is a different proposition, it would appear. Your problem or your issue or your quandary, whatever way you want to term it, then becomes who do I play on the right, rather than where do I play Jota, where do I play Maeda, it becomes who do I play on the right. Mm-hmm. Then it's a straight shootout between three players, Forrest, Maeda and Abada. I'd probably stick with Maeda personally. I'm in no rush to jettison him out the team. There seems to be a small number of fans who just aren't having him. I think that's a bit harsh. I think you will see that over the course of the season they'll majorly contribute to the team more often than not. However, Abada seems to just have that X factor about him. I've mentioned it many, many times before. He's not scared to make a mistake. He's not scared, you know, he can scarf the ball at the park 1 minute and then produce a real moment of quality the next. That's the type of player he is. I'm completely at peace with that. I'm happy to take the 50-50 gamble that you get with him when he's on the park. You know, he's a young player, he's only got to get better. For me, it would still be Maeda, based on the fact that just Ange likes him and he's obviously carrying out very specific instructions. But I don't think we're any weaker with Abada.
Yeah, and I suppose Celtic could continue to do what they have been doing, Paddy, switching mid-game. So often you'll see them line up with Maeda on the left, Jota on the right, and then 20 minutes in, you know, they flipped it across and that's the way it goes. Maeda picked up a knock, so you'll have seen the chance that he's got on the end of right on the half-time whistle. He's unlucky, actually. It's a very good effort, a very kind of clever effort, but he's picked up a knock, so it might well be that Abada steps in by default, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. In terms of the goal Celtic have conceded, we've covered it lightly in terms of, I think Jens was potentially a bit flat-footed there, and it's another goal he conceded from a corner, and there's a wee bit of frustration in that.
I would say the bigger frustration for me was the weak tackle in the midfield that led to it. There was a couple of tackles where we should have been a bit firmer. Yeah. The ball goes out the park, you know, for a throw further up the park, you're probably able to get back into a structure and defend it. Instead, what happened, they kind of bobbled about. I think it was down to O'Reilly and possibly Turnbull. I can't remember if it was him or McGregor was involved. And we talk about a genuine number six, somebody that's got to go in there, almost a kind of enforcer type role, where those balls don't bobble about somebody's feet. You make the tackle or you make the foul, it breaks up the play and you reset and you start again. It just kind of bobbled about, frayed about. As a result, County were able to get the ball in over the top, which led to the corner, and then we've not really defended the corner properly. However, this stage in the season, new centre-half partnership, you know, it doesn't sound like County, the highlights are hard to tell from, but it doesn't sound like County had many moments. If they are going to score, it's probably from such moments. And yeah, it's one of those things. As long as we get better at it as the season goes on, that's the main thing. We've got away with it on Saturday. One interesting point, Kyogo, Iacovite, both attempted knee slides, both nearly broke their kneecaps.
Aye.
Into the turf, went flying.
Aye.
Lads, too early in the season for that. Well, wait till October.
Well, just
wait till October. That's a tip for the lads.
August grass isn't particularly helpful to the old knee slide.
But I'll show you something. The park will be kept dry to stop us playing our game as well. So
no, in the middle of a heatwave, lads.
Same old Ross County, Paddy.
Same old Ross County.
You'd mentioned, Miff, so obviously teams like Ross County, they're going to try their luck when it comes to set pieces. That's their biggest chances against teams like Celtic. And obviously they've scored one from the corner. Not long after that, they've got a dangerous free kick. I think Jens again at fault as such. He's taken the yellow card. That's been this guy might be through here, I'll take the yellow. I don't mind that. You know, it's what do you call your man for Italy? Bonucci?
Chiellini.
All these characters. Did you see? Yes, I did. His handball.
Amazing.
The most cynical of defenders, but you would take him all day long because he knows when to do it and when not. So Maurice Jens taking a leaf out of Chiellini's book, taking the yellow card, fine, free kick in the edge of the box. Now, I'm not convinced by Celtic's wall. I think it's gone through the wall, and it's hard to tell how that's happened. but it's a huge save from Joe Hart, because at that stage in the game, it's one each. You're taking a bit of a dip, you know, just by nature of conceding that equaliser. If Celtic had gone 2-1 down at that stage, Paddy, it would have been a long way back.
Yeah, it would have been. It's obviously, it was a vital point in the game, and like you say, the heads probably are down a little bit, but I don't know if this team knows when they're down, to be honest though, Tino, and I think that, not to say that I would like to have seen that, I would like to see how they would react to something like that, because one each is fine, but going behind, no one likes to go behind, but we were very, very quick last season in righting those wrongs if we did go behind at any of the games. So I think that mentality still continues. I still wouldn't worry too much.
You're right, it'd have been interesting. I mean, you wouldn't choose to go 2-1 down, no. But listen, we'll face adversity at some point, you know, potentially domestically, certainly with some tough challenges in Europe. So we'll maybe get to see that, Paddy.
Just to touch on that point, though, that's the template for a championship winning team, in the sense that your keeper making big saves at big moments. You're not going to serenely just go through the season without conceding chances. And that, I agree with you. Jens has probably been a bit cute there. He's realised he's not the last man. Guy's just outside the box. It's a good yell to take. The save is an excellent save. Big save at a big time from a big name goalkeeper.
Yeah, and that's the job of a Celtic goalkeeper, isn't it? You might have nothing to do for most of the game, and then all of a sudden you're called into action, and it's at times like that when a Joe Hart steps up where a Barkas potentially didn't, for example. Yeah. Anyway, moving forward. In terms of the substitutions, I thought it was interesting how Ange played that on Saturday. So he often rings three changes around about the hour mark, and then a couple up, you know, 75, 80 minutes, whatever it may be. He's only gone with three subs over the piece. So Abada came in for Maeda at half-time after he picked up that knock. Jack Amakis came in for Turnbull and sat a wee bit deeper, but effectively behind Kyogo. And Aaron Moy came on at the end, potentially see out the game. That leaves, you know, various guys on the bench, like James Forrest, Bernabei, and others not getting involved at all. What do you think of that approach, Miff? Is it just horses for courses? You know, is he taking just the right moves at the right time?
Well, for Bernabei, you can't put him on for Player of the Year, so that's silly. But with regards to Forrest, I mean, Forrest down the pecking order, I don't... If Jota has justified staying on the park by showing his quality, that's what a squad's for. You know, Forrest said it'd be called upon as and when needed, but he wasn't needed. Now, for me, I don't think there's too much to see there. I think it's just the changes work.
Yeah, and Aaron Moy very quickly being favoured over James McCarthy, Paddy.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously been a few grumbles for Celtic Park that's... It's maybe looking like both parties might just want to try and end this deal with James McCarthy. So I wonder if it's possibly that's what they're thinking. Right, if he's not going to be part of the plans here, then Moy needs to go in. You know, needs to get the minutes under his belt. Well, we're kind of hoping that would have been the same for Ideguchi before picking up the injury. But I think only going with like the three substitutions, it's okay to do that just now on the basis that, you know, we're getting this week in between games. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to two games a week in quick succession, I think obviously we'll see a huge bit of rotation then. I wonder if we do start to see maybe a change in the lineups on that basis, just to try and keep the rest of the players up to speed and just be ready. Obviously, Turnbull comes in for an injured Hatate at the weekend, and that'll be good. Good some minutes under his belt as well. But yeah, the likes of Forrest, even the likes of Moy as well, that like it's up to them to push and keep pushing and just make sure that they're ready to come into the team. But for McCarthy, yeah, I don't know what the drill will be there. I think it's going to be very hard to shift him if we are going to sell him.
Yeah, I think he's on good money, yeah. And I think he's still got 3 years of a 4-year deal to go, so everything needs to be right for that to happen. I can't see anybody in Scotland being able to make that work for James McCarthy, and I wonder if it's a move back down to probably the Championship down there. But what I mentioned it last week, I think his stock is high given what he achieved in English football, but yeah, we'll see what happens. I think Aidan McGarry was speaking during the week about having bumped into James McCarthy, and the suggestion is he wants to go and play football, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen at Celtic. The only other confusion regarding that and the future of Mikey Johnson, you might have read, is that as part of Celtic's 25-man Champions League squad, if I've got my details right here, you need to have 4 club-trained players, i.e. they need to have played in your academy for, I think, 3 years, and you need to have a further 4 Scottish-trained players. So guys like Greg Taylor, who was trained at Kilmarnock, is fine. James McCarthy, who was trained at Hamilton Accies, for example. And I believe if Mikey Johnson and McCarthy are allowed to move on, Celtic have a gap there that they need to fill. So there's maybe just a wee bit more to it, and it might explain why the two of them are still around at the moment, but we'll see what happens. In terms of going back to the game against Ross County, MF, so generally speaking, we've covered it, it's a difficult venue to go to, and there's no doubt, Paddy, as you've mentioned, that they've improved under Malky Mackay over the last 12 months or so. We are back there in a few weeks' time, so we're up there on the 31st of August in the League Cup, and then we're not back there until the 1st of April in terms of the league stuff. And you'll be happy enough, Miff, to be going back there at that time of the year rather than maybe a heavy December or January, won't you?
Yes, you would. Those trips are always a nightmare, but maybe not for the guys that were there on Saturday. I don't think it would have been too much of a nightmare. I mean, bottle of tonic at 7:30. But yes, you'd rather go up there at the fairer time of the season, albeit I believe midges can sometimes be a problem at that time of the year.
Take your word for it.
I remember once going to Inverness and it got snowed off, and we were in Kinghousie, I think we went to, and because you hadn't actually been to the game, what a condition, man. But because the game got called off just as we were driving up to the stadium. But anyway, sorry, slight tangent there. Nothing domestically should hold any fears for us, regardless of what time of the year it is. But I take your point. Sometimes playing games slightly back-to-back can be a bit more awkward. But I would imagine the team that plays on that occasion will be very different to the team that played on Saturday.
Yeah, very probably. Paddy, overall, though, pleased to get down the road with the 3 points.
Excellent. Just continuing a good solid start. They're warming up. We're nowhere near watching what we watched last year, and I think that will come. But my God, some of the goals we've scored already are brilliant.
Yeah, I think you're right. The momentum's slowly building. We're far from at our best, but there's positive signs there, and we're ticking along. Before we continue with this week's show, I wanted to let all of our listeners know that our premium subscription service, the Celtic Exchange Plus, is now up and running. The Celtic Exchange Plus allows you to access even more podcast shows from us throughout the month, including pre- and post-match shows for every Celtic game, our exclusive Celtic Relived series, special episodes with coaches, journalists and ex-Celtic players, and much, much more. We're offering all new listeners a free 7-day trial, which you can sign up for now at thecelticexchange.supercast.com. And our weekly choice will remain free and available here on your podcast player of choice. But if you'd like to enjoy our exciting new range of shows and to make sure you don't miss any of the action as the new Celtic season gets underway, then just visit thecelticexchange.supercast.com to start your free trial today. Moving on, Miff, we're going to have a wee look at the transfer front, and it all seems a wee bit quiet there just now, so we've got a bit over 3 weeks to go, and I do think there's still a strong chance we'll see some ins and outs between now and the 1st of September. I had a good conversation with Anthony Joseph from Sky Sports News on Friday last week about the transfer window so far, and you can hear that now actually at the Celtic Exchange Plus, as Anthony gave us the inside track on Celtic's business so far. That aside, Miff, we've not made any signings since Aaron Moy and Maurice Jens were announced a couple of weeks back there on the 21st of July. And on that note, would you be happy if we went into the season with the squad as is, or do you think that further improvement is still needed?
I think further improvement is still needed, and no, I wouldn't be happy if we went in. Not to say I think there's any major deficiencies in the squad. I think part of continual improvement is just looking at areas where you need to tighten up, and I think it is fairly obvious there's a couple of gaps in the squad, to me anyway. Injuries recently have shown us that. The uncertainty about McCarthy is probably highlighting that as well, because if you feel McCarthy settled and going to be used and had a solid pre-season, you'd be sitting here going, no, but we're well covered in the six, because Adegucci will come back and he'll compete with that as well. However, the simple fact of the matter is, he hasn't. McCarthy doesn't seem to be in the plans, and Adegucci's injured. We've signed Aaron Moy, who's severely lacked in game time. Another robust midfielder for me would be an obvious one, because I don't think Moy's naturally a six either. I think he would ideally want to play a wee bit further up the park. So that's an obvious one for me, and potentially a striker as well still. I feel, if Xhaka, Makisar, Kyogo get injured, then the burden's left on one player, because Ajay is the invisible man. That's the obvious ones for me. I know there's been a few links recently, which I'll let you go into, Tino. But yeah, I would be disappointed if we don't sign anyone else, yes.
I'm in total agreement with you in terms of where the gaps are. I think it's definitely number six. I'm not convinced that Moy is in there to offer that genuine competition for Callum McGregor. I think Moy's a bit of a utility midfielder. I think he'll be hugely beneficial to have around throughout the season, but I'm not sure he's that genuine competition or assistance, to Callum McGregor. And I do think we're light up top. You're absolutely right. It's very possible, or there's a big potential, that Kyogo Giacomakis could take a knock at any given time, training-wise or during a game or whatever, and that leaves you very, very light. We've all agreed that Maeda's not a nine, so I don't think there's an argument to say that, he can step in and cover. He's at his best when he's on the wing, and that's where he's been most effective. So I agree, Miff. I think we're light at six, and there's still a gap there in the forward areas. So in terms of the players that have been linked this week, and links are quite quiet just now, and that's not a bad thing. You know, Celtic in recent times have just, it's been quiet and then they've announced somebody, which is always nice to see. But Ross Barkley from Chelsea has been quoted this morning as a possibility. Talented guy in his day, but his career looks to have kind of dipped a wee bit, Paddy. And there's also a young forward from Marseille, Bamba Dieng. He's a Senegalese striker. I think he's 22, and I think he plays through the middle or on the wing. I don't know much about him, Paddy. I don't know if you do, but thoughts in general on that and Ross Barkley?
Barkley, for me, I mean, we're saying maybe he's had his day. He's 28. It could be a move for someone like Ross Barkley to try and get himself up to the levels that he was thought to reach. A lot of people put a lot of hope into him being, you know, the replacement for the likes of Gerrard and Lampard when they kind of started to come off the scene at England, and it's never really worked out for him. And he's kind of sat at the sides at Chelsea too long now. Do I think it will happen? Probably not. I think because of his age, it's a move up here. He'll probably want a really decent wage, and I think we've maybe made that mistake with McCarthy, and I just don't think it's a move that will happen. Would I want it to happen? Yeah, I would take Ross Barkley. I don't know if many would say that they wouldn't.
He split opinion a wee bit online, and as you know, Twitter is the barometer of all things sensible. There's a lot of kind of to and fro in there. I've not seen much. I don't think anyone's seen much of him in recent times, but you've seen over the years that he's a talented player, Miff. I just wonder though if it's a non-starter, because he'll be on big dough down there.
Yeah.
And he's at 28, you've maybe got one big move left in you, and I don't think you come to Celtic and take a big, big cut. If it was purely for footballing reasons, to play under Ange, to play in the Champions League, then you would, but I just think that's, it's not the way it works. So I don't know, do you think that's maybe dead in the water, Miff?
Yes, purely down to finances. Would I want us to sign Ross Barkley? Yes, I think he's a very talented footballer. I think he's somebody with Champions League experience. Fits the bill in terms of that kind of big name signing that you would probably want to just build a wee bit of momentum, mm-hmm. getting into the Champions League group stages. So for me, that all makes sense. Alone for him, he probably wouldn't want that. I agree with that. He'd probably want a move, a bit of security. But I'm assuming that. Who knows? I don't personally know Ross Barkley.
Roscoe, you don't know?
I see he's also sporting a perm as well. No so keen in that.
Be a mullet next.
That's what all the Edinburgh boys have been shaving up the sides and growing them all in the tash. Horrendous. The rugby boys. but it just doesn't feel like it makes sense to me.
Aye.
Much like the McCarthy move didn't make sense to me, to be honest. It feels a wee bit off. Is he going to come in and be... To me, he would be like a slightly better David Turnbull, almost, like... Be seeing him doing that sort of creative role. Should you not be trying to develop Turnbull more than bringing him in and exposing Turnbull to the Champions League? That would be my argument on that specific role. But as a signing, I think he comes in and he makes your first 11 better. Quite simple.
There was a curveball thrown at us in response on Twitter in terms of there's various Chelsea players who haven't been given a squad number for the season ahead. One of which is Billy Gilmore.
Gilly Bilmore.
That's the man. Would you take a guy like that, Paddy? He'll earn far less wages, of course, than Barkley. Talented guy, fits in very well for Scotland. Don't think his mum is a big fan of the Celtic. That was quite obvious when he signed for Norwich and she wasn't fond of the green scarf.
I wasn't expecting this question. Mm-hmm. However, what I will say is, when McGregor and Gilmore play together for Scotland, they complement each other excellently.
That was mentioned, there's a relationship there. So what about it, Paddy?
I don't know.
Your green-tinted specs saying I'm not
having... No, it's not a case of that. I'm not that bad.
So what is that a case of?
I don't know.
explain yourself.
I would have to say that I don't see where that fits in our system. I think he's a very good player, but I think it would be, if we were to go for someone at like a six and move McGregor forward, then where does that? I don't know if that partnership happens in our midfield. Do you know what I mean? Like, and he's not going to change. He's not going to change the formation.
I wasn't expecting this. This game was a bit of a shock to me, but I labelled him. Berlini Esther. Just because he's just got such great poise on the ball. I know all about where he's come through the ranks and his mum. Seen a few things about that on, you know, she obviously is no fan of Celtic, that's fair to say. However, would he improve our team? I think he would. But I can't, that's just not going to happen. I doubt it. The lad is a good player, but I don't think that, again, you talk about a fit. Is that going to fit? I don't think so.
Maybe not. Last curveball for you, Miff. So another one which has been reported today is that your old favourite Jack Henry has fallen out of favour at Club Bruges. You having him back?
Absolutely not.
You've been quite vocal in your, what's the word? I don't know. You're not a fan, put it that way.
Is that seriously?
Yeah.
Is that...
Apparently he's out the picture at Bruges. Much as he had a decent season last season, played Champions League for them, he's not in the picture now. I don't know if there's been a change behind the scenes, but it seems that he's looking for a new club.
Someone's found that clip of Farrell and just been like, who's this guy?
Listen, fair play to him, because he went to Belgium and he clearly improved himself to get that move. Absolutely, you know, I have nothing personally against him. I just think he's short of the standard required, and he is someone I don't feel would improve our squad if he came back.
I think you're right. A couple of other talking points, one on-field, one off-field as such. You again might have read this, Barry, today. John Kennedy's been linked with the vacant managerial job at Midtjylland. Mm-hmm. So Sviatchenko's club, obviously Celtic played them in qualifiers last year. And I don't know if that's paper talk or not. I really don't know. It's an interesting link. It's a bit out there. But what do you think, Maffa? I don't get the vibe that John Kennedy's going to be tempted away anytime soon. I think he'll enjoy developing under Ange. I think he's part of an exciting something at Celtic just now. But at some point, he may go it alone. But do you see that happening?
Where are you getting all this from?
I just make it up, Maff. I just spin it off my own head and throw it out at you guys and see what happens.
John Kennedy.
Have you got the internet at home? You get the web?
John Kennedy, it's all there. Denmark. Where was it Tam Courts went? Hungary?
I didn't even know that. Where are you getting that from?
That's fact.
Fact.
I don't see it, but good luck to him if he does. Obviously, Svitchenko's the obvious link there. I would be surprised. I'd be surprised if I think something's building at Celtic, and he's been around the club long enough to know, you know, different eras when there's a bit of momentum behind the club and how great that can be. He's played on the big nights we've had at Celtic Park in Europe. He's played in the Champions League. I would be surprised if he did it, but if he does go, then all the best to him, because we can't argue with the service he's given us.
Yeah, definitely. So that's all the curveballs for today, Miff. You'll be glad to know you can relax a wee bit.
On the defensive a wee bit. No, the Billy Gilmore one, that's not going to happen, man.
I doubt it. See, if he did have to go, Kennedy, would he not be better off trying the managerial journey eventually in order to try and maybe come back to us as a manager? Would that maybe not be the thinking behind that?
Because I'd like to see it.
I don't see the jump from assistant manager to manager. I think that's just too much for anyone, to be honest. I know it happens, but...
Quite a natural progression would be go out the way to come back in the way, and it might be that he goes and develops himself somewhere. There's huge risk for a guy like John Kennedy and others in his position, because so he was touted for the Hibs job, for example, before Maloney got it, and he could have left a very comfortable position at Celtic where he's, you know, very highly respected and valued, got to Hibs for 3-4 months like Maloney, found himself out a job and no job back at Celtic. Aye. And that's a huge risk for a guy with a life and a family and a mortgage and everything that goes with it.
Hibs absolutely kippered Maloney. Punt it Boyle and then brought him back.
I know.
Oh man, he's clearly their best player.
As yesterday showed.
Absolute nonsense.
Last wee bit of transfer chat as such, it's going the other way. So Chris Julian, he's now failed to make either of our first two matchday squads, even though Stephen Welsh is missing. So Welsh is out the picture and Julian can't get in. He must surely be looking to get away, Paddy.
Absolutely. I thought you were going to talk about Alan McGregor not being number one for Rangers, and maybe he was worth a shout there.
Not interesting.
Maybe your rumours have went tonight, you know. Julian, time to go. 100%. Should have happened already.
Yeah, it sounds like when it's come to the Schalke move that he's put the brakes on it somewhere.
Aye.
And whether that's for financial reasons or whatever it may be, but surely a guy like Atmiff, and I'll throw Albion Ayeti into that bracket as well, surely at this stage they just want to go and play games of football.
Listen, you would expect so, but who knows, that they'll have their own motivations, and ultimately you just need to stand back and say, right, well, if you're looking after your family, that's all that really matters. But with Julian, I think there's an element of ego there, where he's not been part of the squad last season. He's let that be known. He looks like he could potentially be a disruptive influence. I'm completely speculating there, but judging by his mannerisms and his body language pre-season, I can completely understand why he's not in matchday squads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Despite his experience and despite him potentially being useful coming off the bench, it doesn't surprise me that he's not involved.
Yeah, he's well out the picture, so we'll see what happens with guys like him and Ayeti moving forward. Before we're going to talk about Kilmarnock, I picked up an interesting quote from Greg Taylor, who was speaking after the game on Saturday. So he says, "The system the gaffer has put in place is designed in such a way that as long as everyone does their small bit, we'll look at our best. It's hard work, it's not an easy way to play football, but if you get it right, it's certainly the most enjoyable." And I think, Miff, I'll obviously always come to you when it comes to Greg Taylor. I can see the love hearts in your eyes. Greg Taylor's as good an example as any of players who have thrived under Ange. But what I think's interesting is that before Ange arrived at Celtic, everyone spoke about how he was gung-ho, he was all attack, all about going forward, all about that kind of cavalier style of play. But if anything, Miff, I think it's defensive players like Taylor, like Ralston, like Carter Vickers, and even Joe Hart as a goalkeeper behind the defence, who have potentially made the biggest improvements under Ange.
Absolutely, and I would include Carol Starfelt in that as well, based on his end to the season last season. One thought that jumped into my head there is, if Greg Taylor can play for Celtic, and probably Billy Gilmore can as well, but that's maybe a different story for a different day. Taylor has thrived. I think where you have to applaud Taylor the most, clearly he's a fit guy, right? So if you play professional football, you need to be fit. And
Lee Griffiths,
different players will achieve different levels of fitness. Well, that's an example, because he's someone who could have knuckled down, got fit, scored himself some goals, but he chose to go up to some other activities. But with Greg Taylor, he's obviously embraced the challenge because it was something different. And I know, listen, we've spoken about this before, you know, he's a bit of a pet of mine as well. But with Taylor, underlooked with him is his quality on the ball, or how that's improved. He was really nervy, especially the start of last season when he was asked to play that. He was getting the ball, he's back to goal in midfield, and you could see he's like, please don't give me this ball in here. However, he's clearly been coached to embrace that. He himself has adopted an attitude to embrace it. So it's twofold. It's the manager clearly saying, I can work with you and I can make you better. But it's the player embracing it and saying, being open-minded enough to have that mindset to say, I want to do this. What he's then found is he's picking the ball up, he's spraying passes, switching play, he's playing intricate passes, he's waiting in overlaps when he would normally be the guy overlapping. It's just completely changed the way he's looking at the game. You can also see he's playing with such enthusiasm. At times, he and Ralston and Juranovic as well are actually driving the team on by the way that they play, by the way the system is. They're just battling so hard for each other. It's just great to see. And one of my mates was joking, my mate Gary and Conan, the two of them have been listening to the podcast, so gents, and they said, you'll need to raise the fact that Taylor could maybe play at number six in the midfield. My retort to that was, I think I've already mentioned in the podcast, he's the best centre mid that we've got, because that's effectively the position that he's picking up in. Whether a longer term experiment in midfield would work, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting a bit giddy just at how his early season form has been. But I think the point is worth noting that the improvement, yes, fitness levels, absolutely. Playing the inverted fullback role, absolutely. But I think it's the quality on the ball that's improved the most.
It's 100% improved. You can just see that. The eye test tells you that, you know, let alone the stats. Paddy, I think, again, to lead on from this point, when it comes to playing within Ange's system, it's a two-way street. Ange will make you a better player if you listen to his instruction. But as a player, you've got to buy into that. And I think you've seen the buy-in from Taylor and Ralston being the biggest and best examples. And I think under Ange, you're either all in or you're all out. Yeah. And I think maybe Chris Julien, maybe Albin Ayeti, maybe Ball and Goalie, Barkas, it wasn't for them for whatever reason. They didn't want to embrace. That was a real chance for them to revive their Celtic careers, fresh slate under Ange. And for different reasons, these guys have not embraced it, but Taylor absolutely has.
The Ball and Goalie one's possibly a wee bit harsh because he did play once and did well.
He did.
But again, I think it's possible that just his card's been marked.
Aye. I think he was basically told, you'll go when we get rid of you type of thing after everything that happened with him. I can see what you're saying. I think it's definitely the ones that are buying into it, the ones that are starting, the ones that are part of the matchday squads, and that they're putting everything into it. And it's kind of going back to what we were saying. We've spoke about the rotation of the team and how crucial it's going to be for us. And to have a squad harmony where you literally have a squad of 20 already willing, wanting to play for the team is very impressive. You know, I don't think you get a lot of teams in football that can pull that off, in my opinion. So
I think you can see the enthusiasm throughout the team. And Taylor leads from the front when it comes to that. You know, when anybody scores a goal, he's often one of the first guys there. And you can just see that spirit there, can't you, within the dressing room?
His spirit, it's confidence from him as well. It really is. He's starting to believe in himself. The ability has definitely improved for Greg Taylor. But I think a lot of that has been enabled by just having more confidence in himself. And exactly what you're talking about, Miff. Just being able to take the ball in tighter positions. He's thriving on it now. He's looking for the ball down the line instead of trying to go back the way. And I swear to God, we've spoken about this many times last season. The amount of teams that try and play the ball in behind him, he wins every header. And I think he's really come on leaps and bounds. And I'll definitely hold my hands up for him. I still like to see the wee man Bernabe come in and push him and push him and push him, because I just think that's what's made Juranovic play so well when he's in the team, and it's definitely what's making Anthony Ralston continue to get better as well. So it's only a good thing for us.
I think just every time we speak about Taylor Miff, I glance up and I see you sitting there like a proud father with the, like, I see the glistening of your tear forming in your eyes. You're just, you're delighted, aren't you?
What a guy
indeed. So let's take a look now at that fixture against Kilmarnock at the weekend. So Celtic head to Rugby Park for match day 3 in the Scottish Premiership, and we play newly promoted Kilmarnock. Derek McInnes' side, they're still looking for their first league win of the season. They've drawn one and lost one of their two games so far. Paddy, a difficult surface, a stuffy opponent. It's probably not going to be, you know, vintage football, is it?
No, the return of Kyle Lafferty as well. It's going to just be elbows everywhere, isn't it? I think we're a better team, and I do think we'll have too much for them. I'm not worried about that.
I mean, you mentioned Lafferty there. I think, you know, Kill have made a couple of signings, and obviously they're newly promoted, as I mentioned there, but by and large, they carry a lot of players who seem to have just been around forever in Scottish football, you know, Scottish football journeyman, to use that term. Guys like Kyle Lafferty, absolutely. Alan Power, Ash Taylor, who's now there after his stint at Aberdeen, Rory McKenzie. They just kind of feel like the same club as they've been for years.
Did Power go to St Mirren?
And he's now back.
Is he back?
Is Chris McInnes
still playing? Derek McInnes has got the power.
McInnes, that park, Lafferty.
Are you excited for it, Miff?
Well, the only thing, we were speaking about the man, Greg Taylor. At least he's somebody that will be off-y with that particular pitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, historically, we've struggled at places like Rugby Park in the past. Livy as well, you know, similar idea with the artificial surface. But Paddy, do you think Angie's set us up in such a way that these games are maybe less the struggle that they used to be?
I just think it kind of comes with belief in yourself and being able to just know, try and keep the ball down on the deck as much as possible. It's too many times, I think, under the likes of, like, when this so-called curse at the spaghetti had kind of come up, I think a lot of people were kind of thinking it's all down to do with just the belief in the team and whether, you know, they were going up against hatchet men, the part was slow. But the games against Livy last season, we blew them up. Well, we eventually started to just blow them away. They won James Forrest's goal, great goal. And I just think that they just need to know if we keep doing what we're doing, keep the ball on the deck, we are better, we are quicker than them. It slows the game down, there's no doubt about it. It won't be watered as well. It'll be a dry, sticky part, but we're a better team, and I just think that that's the mentality going into this game.
Yeah. So you're saying no knee slides for Kyogo?
No, not this one.
Not surely advisable. You just get the entire squad to go in the park with a full bottle of water and kid on their missing their mouth.
That's a good shout. It's a good shout.
That's why you're at the cutting edge of the
Some of the boys
the
were pointing out, did you see what Fulham done?
No.
So obviously I think Liverpool were saying that the park was quite dry on Saturday. After the 2 weeks draw, they put out a tweet, I think it was the following morning, and all the sprinklers are on, all over the park. Morning, guys.
I mean, it is what it is. Teams, whether it's Fulham or Killy or whoever it is, you've got to do all you can to get an advantage. And their job isn't to make life easy for us, that's the way it's going to be. I'd mentioned if they drew their first game 1-1 with Dundee United, I think, with a late equaliser. They get beat 2-0 at Ibrox last week. Pressure will quickly start to mount if they don't start to pick up some points. So I would expect it'll be a backs-to-the-wall damage limitation job for McInnes.
Possibly. McInnes knows how to set up his teams. He's a good manager, as much as it pains me to say it. But the fact is, Killy know, as a newly promoted team, they just need to try and get points on the board by any means necessary. If that means shutting up shop and defending against us. But what we often find with teams is that they'll go through periods of the game where they will kind of come up and press you to try and keep you in. Like Paddy says, it's how we react to that. Do we retain our composure, trust the process, keep the ball, move it quickly? If you do those things, you will get your chances. That's what kind of turned the screw against Livingston. I happened to be at that game. So, I think there is, when it comes up against a team with plastic pitch, there's always that wee bit of trepidation. Not necessarily because of any perceived curse or struggle that we've had before, just because you already know the type of pattern the game's going to have and that it's not necessarily going to be a great watch. I think that's more where it comes from, whereas when you know you're going to see Celtic, say at Celtic Park or a comparable park, you know they're going to play their stuff. These pitches tend to be a wee bit of a leveller, but if we stick to our guns, I'm pretty sure we'll get the victory.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a pretty watch, Paddy, and if you could call it now, you would take 1-0 back up the road, wouldn't you?
Yeah, happily. As I say, they're always just a slow game to watch when it's on these parks. I still say that they should be nowhere near a top flight. I get that it brings in revenue, but the league should be looking at a way to kind of making sure that doesn't have to be the case. It shouldn't be allowed.
Matt, you're the man on form when it comes to scoreline predictions. What are you giving it for Sunday?
2-0.
Safe. Paddy?
2-0.
I've got it in my notes. I'll show you after. I've gone 2-0 as well. Aye. Boring as it may seem, it just kind of seems that kind of game, doesn't it? So 3 2-0s, an aggregate of 6-0. 2-0 for all of us. my final thoughts, you're another week older, another week wiser. Any final thoughts for the week?
Any final thoughts for the week? No, I think just more of the same. I was actually speaking to a guy in work today just about how unusual it is not having the two games a week. In some ways, as much as you bemoan it at the time, you probably feel it always a wee bit more cohesion and a bit of oil in the wheels, with the fact that you're playing so regularly. So you would maybe have seen a wee bit more rotation in that case as well, so you would have seen more players featured. But on the whole, I think I definitely would prefer to be in our position where we've only got the one game a week just now. The team's fairly settled, seems to be hitting a rhythm, and hopefully that continues on Sunday.
Yeah, Ange was asked after the game actually about that, about having another week to prepare, actually 8 days between Saturday there and Sunday coming, and was it a good chance to rest and recuperate the players? And he said it's not about that, it's more about just getting everyone more up to speed, you know, still working with the system.
Yeah.
For a lot of guys, it's still new. It's brand new for guys like Maurice Jens and Bernabei and other guys that are just learning how this all works. And I think for Ange, this is his dream scenario. You know, he didn't have the luxury of it last year, and he's now got the opportunity to just go and spend time with these players and make those improvements. So, Paddy, I mean, generally speaking, very steady start to the season, 2 wins from two, can't do any better than that. Are you looking forward to what lies in store over the next couple of months?
I can't wait, and it's kind of just touching on that same point as well. It's, you remember a lot of the times he was getting interviewed at games probably around about February, March, and just talking about, I'm not getting enough time with him on the training park, and we're getting that now. And it's, you know, God, if we thought last season was good, and we a lot will say that we kind of overachieved with the team and the transition that happened. I cannot wait to see this settled team with this full amount of training, full pre-season, and then when the two games start coming, that's when we're going to see the benefits of everything. So now it's, and when he has to tweak something, if he does have to tweak any of the system, it's not going to take long. It's not going to take a huge amount of time. It's very exciting.
I agree. I think there could be some really exciting times ahead. So another week, another Celtic win, and another man of the match display from Jota. Next up, it's Kilmarnock, as the Portuguese winger and his teammates target a third league win of the season this weekend. Thanks to Myth and Paddy for joining me on today's show, and thanks to you as always for tuning in. Don't forget to visit thecelticexchange.supercast.com to begin your free 7-day trial of the Celtic Exchange Plus and to access all of our new shows. But in the meantime, from all of us here, thanks for listening.
Network.